Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Oh, what a weekend to be a football fan. The NFL draft's taking place for 2021, and we also have some great stories on the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch of football history just for you for this April 30th, coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. And like we told you at the beginning, I think you're really going to enjoy this episode of Pigskin Daily History Dispatch because we have the April 30th edition, the last day of April, but there is some great football history to share with you. And, you know, it's the draft weekend in the NFL, so we have that going on. But this draft history that we have today, a little bit of draft history, but some other things. We have some league history and some player history with some great stories on both, and I think you're going to really enjoy it as we go back in the annals of gridiron history and talk about some nostalgic moments from that time. And we'll start off with our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it came from a May 2nd, 1921 edition of the Rock Island Argus in Rock Island, Illinois, and it read, "Pro football heads seek one big association." Of course, they were writing about the April 30th, 1921 meeting in Akron, Ohio of the American Professional Football Association. A lot of things happened in that meeting. Another article came in the Buffalo Evening News, printed this headline that same day, that said, "Buffalo included in the Pro Football League, organization to include 24 cities in the association, affected in Akron." Great headlines from, you know, newspapers from across the country from each other, but they're all talking about what would become the future NFL, the American Professional Football Association. And at their meeting, which is sort of the start of the spring meetings, I think, for pro football, it was in Akron, Ohio on that April 30th day, months before the second season commenced. Remember, the first season was that 1920 season, just got over with. And the association decided to reorganize, and they placed Joe Carr of the Columbus Panhandles. He was named as the president of the league. Remember, Jim Thorpe had been the president in year one, and then the group was years away from having a commissioner. With Carr named as the head of the association's, the headquarters also moved to Columbus, Ohio, because, of course, he was with the Panhandles, and a league constitution and bylaws were drafted, giving teams territorial rights, restricting player movements, and developing membership criteria for franchises. The league would play under the rules of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, NCAA rules, the football rules of 1921. And official standings were issued for the first time, so there would be a clear champion. Probably the most significant of the revisions of the bylaws were that only games played against fellow league teams would count towards the standings. This single change inspired two forms of growth and unity because it would encourage outside independent teams, such as those from the Ohio League and the New York Professional Football League, to join the American Professional Football League, but it also encouraged those who did not join to fold within a few years because the NFL teams, particularly those competing for a championship, would be much less willing to play what were effectively exhibition games against teams that could not help them in the standings. And that's sort of what happened that first year. You're going to see in a second with the second part of this story that some of these teams that did not belong to the APFA, they were playing, you know, games and they were counting the records for the APFA teams, and teams were, you know, sort of piling on some of these other teams, and they thought it was unfair. They wanted to play the competition within the league. So also at that same meeting, the first American Professional Football Association championship, which was for the 1920 season, was officially awarded to the Akron Pros. The haste of putting together the APFA, it left many loose ends, and where there's wiggle room, controversy will soon arise. According to the SBNation.com, the APFA founders hadn't decided how to determine their champion prior to that inaugural season. Games against non-APFA teams were counted to beef up records, and none of the team managers were shy in proclaiming their rights to the title. Akron had two wins to its credit against non-APFA teams. Decatur would finish the season with 10-1-2, but five of its wins came against non-league teams. Buffalo finished the season at 9-1-1, and five of its wins came against non-APFA teams. Neither had lost to Akron, but neither had beaten Akron either. And Akron ended up with the most APFA wins when all was said and done. Even Canton still had its eyes on the championship cup, but Akron had the best claim to the title. But the trophy wouldn't be given out until this April 1921 league meeting. And that time, the challenges had cooled off a bit, and the other teams from the other leagues were even declaring themselves as champions. April 30th, 1985, the Virginia Tech defensive end Bruce Smith was the first pick by the Buffalo Bills in the 1985 NFL Draft. The great pass rusher found himself in the Pro Football Hall of Fame once he was eligible for that because he had a great career. Others from his class that have been found worthy of the gold jacket, according to the Pro Football Reference, are Chris Dolman, who was selected fourth by Minnesota, wide receiver Jerry Rice, who was a 16th overall selection by San Fran, and fellow wideout Andre Reed, who was also taken by the Bills in the 86th spot. The steal of the draft, though, was the Rams selection of linebacker Kevin Green with the fifth round and 113th pick. A selection that should not go unnoticed is that of Dallas at 114, who selected Herschel Walker, a running back that headed to the USFL. But when that league folded, Dallas still had his rights, and they parlayed that in a few years later to receive multiple players and draft picks from him, from the Vikings. And the Cowboys used the capital, that draft capital, and all those players to become a dynasty just a few short years later. You know, Herschel Walker is not yet in the Hall of Fame. Not sure if he will make it in there, but just interesting. He was picked 114th. The Cowboys really took a chance on him because they knew he was probably heading to the USFL because that's where the money was flowing. April 30th, 2015, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers used the 2015 NFL Draft's number one overall pick to select Florida State quarterback Jameis Winston. It is interesting and surely a sign of what the collective bargaining agreement and salary cap has spawned, that though this draft was only a mere 6 years ago at the time of this recording, there's only one player in the top 10 picks in that 2020 was still with his original franchise that drafted the player. And here's what the Pro Football Reference top 10 picks from the 2015 draft were. Jameis Winston at number one. At number two, the Tennessee Titans took Marcus Mariota, the quarterback from Oregon. Dante Fowler, an outside linebacker from Florida, went to Jacksonville with the number three pick. The Oakland Raiders chose Amari Cooper, a wide receiver from Alabama, at number four. And Brandon Schreff, a tackle from Iowa, was chosen by the Washington Redskins at number five. And Brandon Schreff is our one player that is still with the Washington franchise. The New York Jets at number six took Leonard Williams, a defensive end from USC. And Kevin White, a wide receiver from West Virginia, went to the Chicago Bears at seven. The Atlanta Falcons, they took an outside linebacker from Clemson, Vic Beasley, at number eight. And Eric Flowers, the big tackle from Miami, Florida, went to the New York Giants with the ninth pick. The St. Louis Rams took Todd Gurley, the running back out of Georgia, with the 10th pick. And those are some great picks from that 2015 draft, and you can find that on theprofootballreference.com. Now let's talk about some birthdays of Hall of Famers. On April 30th, 1887, Scranton, Pennsylvania, Doc Fenton, the great signal caller of Mansfield Normal School from 1904 to 1906 and LSU from 1907 to 1909, arrived in this world. Doc had been playing rugby up in Canada when, at the urging of a fellow Pennsylvanian, he enrolled at Mansfield and played football. at Mansfield in 1906. He was the starting end. And to put that in perspective, that was the first season that the forward pass was legal in college football in 1906. Fenton had the urge to move to a warmer climate of the South. And according to the website and thevalleyshook.com, he started having conversations with head coach Fred Furman of Mississippi A&M, which is now called Mississippi State. However, the new coach at LSU, Edgar Wingard, caught wind of this, and Edgar Wingard is described as a notorious hellraiser. Wingard implemented a fast-paced offense which relied on deception, speed, and a newly invented forward pass. Coach W also evidently had some skills as an early 20th century gridiron recruiter too, as he talked Doc into recruiting visit at Baton Rouge, and then sealed a deal with a promise of nickel beers and a reminder of Starkville, the home of Mississippi A&M's, blue laws that prevented alcohol. That was enough for Fenton, who signed with LSU and immediately transformed the team into an offensive juggernaut. He enrolled at Louisiana State in a Tigers team that just scored just 34 points in six games in 1906, scored 28 points in a season opener in 1907 with Doc on the field. After some midseason struggles, the Tigers finished up their campaign with a 48-0 blowout win over Baylor and an invitation to play in the University of Havana in the Bacardi Bowl, becoming the first American college team to play on foreign soil. Shortly before the bowl game, the promoter feared it would be his financial ruin. He tried to back out of the game, threatening to cancel it altogether. However, locals in Cuba sold tickets to Cuban high society members as well as American GIs stationed on the island country, and the game went off as planned with over 10,000 people in the stands, the local Havana University team hosting the Tigers. Shortly before kickoff, Fenton noticed a gigantic 300-pound Havana player tipping back what was described as his fair share of wine. Doc instructed a teammate to hit him in the stomach on the game's first play, and according to Fenton, the big guy spouted wine like an artesian well. We nearly had to swim out of there. LSU dominated from this point on, and the Cuban fans lauded Fenton as El Rubio Vaselino, the Vaseline redhead, for his amazing play and slippery moves on the open field. On that Christmas Day, 1907, LSU defeated Havana University at the Havana, Cuba, 56-0, as Fenton started the lopsided victory by scoring the game's first touchdown. The initial Bacardi Bowl was such a success that Cuban officials attempted to schedule a second game before the players returned home. According to Marshall Gundy, the players received $25 each to play a second game a few days later, even loaning some of the players to the Cuban side to even up the rosters. LSU won that game as well, but now technically every single player on LSU's roster was now a professional. That would come back to haunt the program later on. As a member of the Tigers, though, Fenton also kicked field goals as well as extra points and scored 107 points in 1907. In 1908, he played two games at end and then became quarterback for the rest of his career. He scored 132 points in 1908, 59 points in 1909. For his 3 years at LSU, he totaled 298 points. This included 36 touchdowns. His longest field goal was 45 yards. The College Football Hall of Fame proudly placed a display in honor of Doc Fenton into their legendary museum in the year 1971. Our next Hall of Famer that had a birthday on April 30th took place in 1918, East Boston, Massachusetts. Georgetown University's tough guard, Augie Leo, was born. According to his bio on the NFF's website, he was known as a bruising blocker and acclaimed for his uncanny accuracy as a place kicker. In both these capacities, Augie Leo was a valuable asset to the Georgetown Hoyas. Beginning in the fall of 1938, Leo's first year on the team, Georgetown started out on a 23-game winning streak. Boston College unfortunately ended the Hoyas' string of victories in the narrowest of margins. The game had started great as Leo scored on the first 10 points virtually all by himself, and he led the team to the first touchdown by executing key blocks, kicking the extra point, and added a field goal soon thereafter. Despite his efforts, the team went down to defeat 19-18. Leo's potent performance spurred writer Grantland Rice to write, "It was the greatest all-around exhibition of power, skill, deception, and spirit I ever saw." Leo booted the early field goal with the ease of a pro. Leo received All-America honors before going on to play professional football himself. Augie Leo's collegiate football records are celebrated in the College Football Hall of Fame after his induction in 1979. April 30th, 1941, West Monroe, Louisiana. The LSU Tigers two-way halfback and defensive back from 1960 to 1962, Jerry Stovall, celebrated his day of birth. The footballfoundation.org sings the praises of Stovall, indicating that he was a unanimous All-American selection in 1962, and he was a literal Mr. Everything for LSU, playing halfback, leading his team in rushing and receiving, and handling punt duties during his 3 years in Baton Rouge. What a player this guy was. He finished at LSU with 1,071 yards and 13 touchdowns on the ground, adding 462 yards and one touchdown receiving. Jerry also held the LSU record for the highest punting average, 42.1 yards average in a season, amassing 165 attempts for 6,477 yards by career's end. Stovall gained nearly 700 return yards on special teams and recorded 7 interceptions as a defensive standout. Jerry Stovall was honored with induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2008 after the National Football Foundation tallied up their votes. You know, what about some great players? We told you we had some great players, some great stories to tell about them. Exciting day this April 30th. We're glad you could join us here today, and we hope you join us each and every day. And one way to do that is you can hit the follow button, or some still call it the subscribe button, on your podcast player, and that will make sure that every time we drop a new episode, which is daily at midnight, you will be notified right away. Sometimes we're dropping two of them like we did today. And make sure you check out our other special bonus podcast today, as we have Jesse Barrett, the author of Pigskin Nation, a great book on the NFL and politics of the late 60s, early 70s. I think you'll really enjoy his book and what he has to share with us on the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast. So make sure you check that out as soon as you're done with this podcast. Also, another thing to check out is check out our website, pigskindispatch.com. We have some great articles always going on there. We have that powerful search engine powered by Earl2Go. And make sure you check out that extension for Chrome, earl2go.com. You'll have that same power of what we have on our website for our search box. But on our search box, you can look up anything football on pigskindispatch.com, and you will be taken to one of our articles or podcasts, or one of those of our partners on the sportshistorynetwork.com. And speaking of sportshistorynetwork.com, check out all of our podcast partners there, because they have some great knowledge of sports history. You know, both football, basketball, baseball, hockey, golf, a little bit of wrestling, weightlifting, just about anything you can imagine. We're getting involved in that, and we have podcasters from all around the world joining us on there. There's about 20 of us right now, and it's growing all the time. So that's sportshistorynetwork.com. Make sure you check that out. Check out our interview with Jesse Barrett, the author of Pigskin Nation, and come back tomorrow, because we have some more great football history to share with you, just like we do every day. And until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
The 2021 Professional Football Researchers Association Convention will be held at the Gold Jacket Lounge at the Pro Football Hall of Fame during the final weekend of June. Convention speakers will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the founding of the NFL. The fee for the convention is $50 for members and $100 for non-members. The fee includes admission to the convention and Pro Football Hall of Fame, meals on Friday evening and Saturday afternoon, and free parking. All convention activities are subject to COVID-19 protocols. For more details, click on the 2021 PFRA convention link at profootballresearchers.org.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.